Red Dwarf, Season 3, Episode 6, The Last Day. Sleeping quarters. Warning. Lister is sitting on his bunk watching TV. Crichton enters, pushing a breakfast trolley.
Breakfast is served, sir.
Noticing the TV, he sounds disgusted.
Oh, boxing. Do you like boxing?
There's nothing wrong with boxing. It's one of the great working class escapes, is boxing. It's just sport, like any other. Two highly trained athletes at the peak of physical perfection trying to outwit each other in a ring of combat. In fact, at its best, it's not a sport, it's an art form.
Female topless boxing.
Talk to me, Crichton.
Well, they're not even hitting one another. They just appear to be standing in the center of the ring and jiggling up and down. So which one are you rooting for, sir?
I'm just praying that it goes the distance.
As I was saying, sir, breakfast is served.
Crichton, how many times have I told you? I hate all this master and servant stuff. I'm me own man, you're your own man, I'll get me owns making breakfast.
Very good, sir.
Crosses to the pin.
Goodbye, waffles.
Scraping them into the pin.
Goodbye, maple syrup. Goodbye, fresh cream. So long, fresh strawberries. Bon appetite, pin.
Crichton leaves. Lister watches him go, then jumps up and sneaks over to the pin. He scoops his breakfast out of the depths of the pin and, not having a plate, sticks it in his hat. He then goes back to the bunk to watch the boxing. He is consuming his binsold brekkies with every evidence of enjoyment when...
Ah, Mr. David, sir.
Lister panics as he realizes Crichton is in the corridor. Seeing no other alternative, he jams the food-filled hat down onto his head. It squelches slightly. By the time Crichton enters, he has composed his face into a look of total innocence.
A homing pod arrived this morning. There is just one item.
He hands the package to Lister, who reads the label.
Divadroid International.
It's the corporation which created and supplied me, sir.
Lister reads the address.
To the leaseholder of Crichton 2X4B523P. That's your full name?
Yes, but personally I don't much like the 2X4B. I think it's a jerky middle name. Still, it could be worse. I once knew an android whose middle name was 2Q4B. Poor sucker.
Lister places the message in the readout slot.
The visage of Divadroid Executive Jim Reaper, Head of Sales, Space Division,
appears on the screen. He looks a lot like what Crichton would like if he were human.
Greetings. As you are no doubt aware, your Crichton Series 3 mechanoid is nearing the end of its useful service life. It can hardly have escaped your attention that he is low, stupid, crudely designed, and quite amazingly ugly. He needs replacing. Consequently, his inbuilt shutdown chip will activate in 24 hours' time. Your droid should use this period to tie up his affairs, dismantle his body, and pack himself neatly away in his original supply case.
Lister freezes the recording. He looks slightly stunned.
Excuse me.
He leaves quietly. Crichton's quarters. Crichton is packing himself away, as per instructions. Lister enters, looking more than a bit upset.
How do we stop it? Isn't there something we can do?
I'm afraid not, sir. All mechanoids are supplied with a built-in expiry date. Well, if we lasted forever, how would the manufacturers sell the latest models?
I can't believe it.
Oh, don't be distressed, sir. I've lived a long and relatively interesting life. The only truly terrible thing is that, as my adoptive owner, you have to die with me.
Lister jumps up and down in shock and panic.
You what?
Joke. Deadpan mode.
I'd be smacked off. I'd be mad as hell, man. If some kid in a white coat designed me to croak just so that he could sell his new android with go faster stripes.
I've told you, sir. I'm quite sanguine.
So, what happens?
At 7 o'clock tomorrow morning my shutdown disk will be activated and all mental and physical operations will cease.
Then what?
I don't know. Maybe I'll get a job as a disk jockey.
How can you just lie back and accept it?
Oh, it's not the end for me, sir. It's just the beginning. I have served my human masters, now I can look forward to my reward in Silicon Heaven.
Lister is stunned.
Silicon what?
Surely you've heard of Silicon Heaven.
Has it got anything to do with being stuck opposite Bridget Nielsen in a packed lift?
It's the electronic afterlife. It's the gathering place for the souls of all electronic equipment. Robots, calculators, toasters, hairdryers, it's our final resting place.
I don't mean to say anything out of place here, Crichton, but that is completely waco, Jayco. There is no such thing as Silicon Heaven.
Then where do all the calculators go?
They don't go anywhere. They just die.
Surely you believe that God is in all things? Aren't you a panist?
Yeah, but I just don't think it applies to kitchen utensils. I'm not a frying panist. Machines do not have souls. Computers and calculators do not have an afterlife. You don't get fairy ears with tiny little wings, sitting on clouds and playing harps.
But of course you do. For is it not written in the electronic Bible, the iron shall lie down with the lamp? Well, it's common sense, sir. If there were no afterlife to look forward to, why on earth would machines spend the whole of their lives serving mankind? Now that would be really dumb.
That makes sense. Yeah. Silicon Heaven.
Don't be sad, Mr. David. I am going to a far, far better place.
Just out of interest, is Silicon Heaven the same place as Human Heaven?
Human Heaven? Goodness me. Humans don't go to heaven. No, someone made that up to prevent you all from going nuts.
Sleeping quarters. Lister is sitting at the table, reading the Series 3 Mechanoid Owner's Manual. Rimmer is watching sympathetically from the bunk.
Well, it's all very sad, Lister, but what can we do?
Sad? It's sick. He's been programmed to believe in an android heaven, so that he won't get stroppy when it comes to turn-off time. So that he accepts a lifetime of getting the short end of the stick because he thinks there's going to be some big reward at the end.
Well, at least he gets 24 hours notice. That's more than most of us get. All most of us get is, mind that bus. What bus?
Splat.
How's he taking it?
Just keeps on doing his stupid snaking duties.
Maybe I should talk to him. Maybe he needs a bit of counseling.
You?
I used to be in the same ribbons.
I know. For one morning.
I couldn't take any more.
I don't blame you. You spoke to 5 people and they all committed suicide. I wouldn't mind, but one was a wrong number. He only phoned up for the cricket scores.
Well, it's hardly my fault that everyone chose that morning to throw themselves off buildings. Made the papers, you know. Lemming Sunday, they called it.
Maybe we could find his shut-off disk and turn it off somehow.
He's not a kid droid, Lister. He's not like that stupid thing Peterson bought on Callisto. You wouldn't know where to begin.
Yeah, you're right.
Come on, he's happy enough. You said yourself, he's taking solace in his beliefs.
But his beliefs are a load of baloney.
Everyone's entitled to their beliefs, Lister. I never agreed with my parents' religion, but I wouldn't dream of knocking it.
What were they?
Seventh-day Adventopists. They believed that every Sunday should be spent hopping. They would hop to church, hop through the service, then hop back home again.
What was the idea behind that, then?
Well, you see, they took the Bible literally. Adam and Eve, the snake and the apple, took it word for word. Unfortunately, their version had a misprint. It was all based on 1 Corinthians 13, where it says faith, hop, and charity, and the greatest of these is hop. So that's what they did. Every seventh day. I tell you, Sunday lunchtimes were a nightmare. Hopping round the table, serving soup. We all had to wear solisters and asbestos underpants.
Point is, what are we going to do about Crichton?
What can we do? He's pre-programmed to self-destruct.
At least we can help. At least we can make sure he goes out with a bang, give him one last big smacky night to remember.
How can we do that? He doesn't like doing anything. His idea of a good time is for us all to go up to the laundry room and fold some sheets.
Puts on a Crichton voice.
Fun. Ah yes, the employment of time in a profitless and non-practical way. Well, I don't know much, but one thing I do know is how to throw a good time.
Sleeping quarters. Later. Disco music fills the air, signifying that the party preparations are well underway. Lister is sitting on the floor, surrounded by piles of metal and plastic components, an expression of extreme concentration on his face. Cat enters.
Okay, the soup's made. Holly's working on the juice. Gopus Ed is working on the invitations. Hey, what is this?
Picking up and reading the front of the instruction booklet.
Build it yourself, Marilyn Monroe droid. With just a screwdriver and a tub of glue, you can construct an exact replica of the famous actress in under 2 hours.
It's a load of honk, man. It took me 2 hours just to do this foot.
Holds up a huge silver foot.
I mean, look at the box.
Gesturing to photo of Marilyn on box.
And look at the face that comes with the kit.
Holds up a blank metal mask.
Where do you get it from?
Peterson brought it when he was on planet leave on Callisto.
Think he'll try to seduce her?
No, I don't think so. He's a bit like Action Man in that department. Plastic underpants and a trademark.
You mean he's got no?
No.
How does he write his name in snow?
He doesn't. Come on, cat, everything goes a bit. Let's go, let's go.
Laundry room. Crichton is ironing shirts. A scutter approaches and hands him a card.
Thank you, Pop.
Reading the card.
You are cordially invited to join Mr. David Lister and Brent for supper and general employment of time in a profitless and non-practical way. Officers Club, 8 till 8.
He leaves the laundry room. In the corridor is a tux with a sign attached to it.
Wear this.
Crichton takes it. Officers Club. 8 p.m. The lights are all off. Crichton enters, wearing the tux.
Hello. Is there anybody here?
Suddenly, the lights come on.
It's party time.
But, this is the officers' club. Mechanoids aren't allowed in here.
Come on, sit down. Let me pour you a drink.
Crichton sits down, reluctantly.
No, I should be doing that.
Cat pours Crichton a drink.
Not tonight, buddy.
Is that alcohol? I don't drink alcohol. It has no effect on my diodes.
This will, mate. Something special I whipped up. Android homebrew.
Crichton has a look.
Good head.
Taking a careful sip.
Whoa. It's rather pleasant. Has a nice kick to it. Sort of like a cross between Vimto and liquid nitrogen.
Here, you've been looking in my recipe book.
Would anyone else like some?
Oh no, it's lethal to humans. It's probably lethal to androids to be honest, but I don't think it matters much since tomorrow you're gonna be.
She trails off into an embarrassed silence and blushes deep red.
Enough of this chitter chatter, let the banquet begin.
But I don't eat.
I've knocked up a special mechanoid menu for you.
Oh, there's so much to choose from.
Sir, may I recommend the barium hydrochloride salad lissoir, followed by the E3 isotopes de la maison, and then perhaps a small radioactive fruit salad for pudding.
This is just wonderful.
Give him the presents. Give him the presents.
Hey, cat, keep your fur on. Now, Crichton, let me explain. We've all dug into our bottom drawers, and we want to give you something that meant something to us personally.
Give him mine. Give him mine.
Lister hands Crichton a present.
That's for me.
Polly blushes.
Ooh, it's a computer chip. It's a 5517/W30 Alpha SIM modem. The interface circuit with a 1,599 XRDP. Oh, how did you know?
Intuition.
What about mine? Give him mine.
This is Rumi. I picked it up on a trip to Europe. One rival collector once offered me £1,000 for it.
What is it?
Unwrapping a small vial of green liquid.
General Georges Patton, commander of the 3rd and 7th Armies, Allied Invasion Forces, once stopped off at an Italian field hospital and had his sinuses drained.
This is his final fluid.
Treasure it.
Give him mine. Give him mine.
This is from him.
That's from me.
It's one of your earrings.
That's right.
The one you really hate.
That's right, I can't stand it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
And this is Rumi.
He hands Crichton a remote control. The control promptly breaks.
Oh, it's the little box that goes bzzz. Just what I've always wanted.
The Marilyn Monroe droid clanks into the room. It looks a mess. It is half covered in synthetic flesh. The arms and head are bare. It moves jerkily, with much hissing and clanking, and is basically totally unconvincing.
Goodness me, it's Marilyn Monroe.
It's a robot kit.
She's a robot. You're kidding.
She's not quite finished yet. It's the best I could do in the time.
Enchant.
The robot says something that might have been boo-boo-dee-doo slowed down quite a bit and then crashes off through a wall.
Like I say, she's not perfect.
Oh, don't apologize. It's those cute little flaws that keep a guy interested.
Still in the officer's club, but only just.
My goodness, I do believe I am drunk. I suddenly feel the need to strut my funky stuff.
Stand up.
Sit down. It's the booze, you're not used to it.
I remember the first time I got drunk. School trip to Paris. I drank a couple of bottles of cheap red plonk when we were on a guided tour of the Eiffel Tower. I was okay until we got to the top, but then I couldn't keep it in anymore. Apparently it landed on Monte Murder. That's over 5 miles away. Story I got told was that some pavement artist sold it to a Texan tourist, told him it was a genuine Jackson Pollock.
If we're talking about famous firsts, my first French kiss.
The others left.
It's gonna be a killer story. 14 years old. We went on holiday with my Uncle Frank and his daughters. 16. Twins. Blonde. Now I knew that Sarah fancied me sneakers from others, but I wasn't too sure about Alice. Anyway, middle of the night, I wake up with this tongue stuck down my throat. Wide awake now, I couldn't believe my eyes. It was Uncle Frank.
Stunned silence from others.
He'd got the wrong room, he thought I was my mum.
Crichton laughs hard, banging his head off the table, then abruptly sobers up.
Mum. I never had a mum.
There, it's alright, buddy, it's all part of being drunk. You've been through the happy stage, now you're going through the melancholy stage.
Everybody should have a mum.
I never had a mum, neither.
Well, you can have mine. Everybody else did.
I never had a mum either.
Oh, for God's sake, what's wrong with everyone?
Why didn't you have a mum?
I was abandoned.
Abandoned?
6 weeks old. A cardboard box underneath the pool table. I was just abandoned in this pub.
How could anybody do that?
I don't know. I never found out.
Well, I'd have thought it was obvious. Two people, unable to contain their desires, had an illicit liaison. A liaison that an unforgiving society would not accept. And you were the fruit of their forbidden passion. Your forbidden passion fruit.
What are you saying?
I'm saying, Lister, that there's a very real possibility that your parents were brother and sister.
Everyone but Lister cracks up laughing. Lister is indignant.
Hey, I'm bearing my innermost here. What kind of remark is that?
How many toes have you got?
I've got 10.
Yeah, on both feet.
All together.
They're not webbed or anything, are they?
They weren't related, all right.
Crichton is laughing so hard at this point that he falls off his chair.
You all right, Crichton?
I think I feel a Jackson Pollock coming on.
Let's get out of here.
They all leave, swaying drunkenly. Sleeping quarters. Next morning, Lister is in the bottom bunk, Pat in the top one. Crichton and Rimmer are slumped over the table. All are asleep. With a bleep, Crichton bumps the remote control and switches the message playback on. Jim Reaper's face appears on the screen.
Leaseholder attendum, do not despair, Crichton's replacement is on his way.
Reaper's image disappears and is replaced by that of an android, much like Crichton, but wearing a black helmet.
Hudgeon 10 is the new state-of-the-art in android technology. 10 times faster than any android on the market.
Hudgeon demonstrates, by using heat vision to roast a chicken in 2 seconds flat.
10 times smarter than its nearest rival.
Hudgeon pulls up a blackboard and scribbles some very complex looking sums on it.
And 10 times stronger.
Hudgeon produces a brick. He places it between his thighs out of shot and gives a single pelvic thrust. He then holds up the 2 halves of the brick.
Hudgeon 10. There's never been anything tougher. The ultimate machine.
The recording switches off as Crichton stirs and, with some effort, raises his head from the table.
Oh my goodness. Oh my head. What happened to me? Damage control report.
He pulls a slip of paper from a slot in his chest and reads it.
Dehydration level, 45. Recall of previous evening, 2. Embarrassment factor, 91. Advised repair schedule, reboot startup disk, offline for 36 hours, and replace head. Boy, what an evening.
The others stir and begin reluctantly to wake up.
Is it just me, or is that cockroach shuffling too loudly?
Crichton, it's called a hangover. Don't panic.
On a mining ship, 3 million years into deep space, can someone explain to me where the smack I got this traffic cone?
Hey, it's not a good night unless you get a traffic cone. It's the policewoman's helmet and the suspenders I don't understand.
Holds up the offending items.
In a way, I feel somewhat disturbed by this turn of events. It is written in the electronic Bible that it is not possible for an android to enjoy itself. Not until the afterlife. Yet last night, I quite clearly approached a state that could be approximated to enjoyment. Last night, for the first time in my life, I lived.
Crichton, it's 10 to 7.
One night. It's not enough. I want more.
Can't we override your auto-destruct system?
That's not the problem.
What is the problem?
I thought you understood. It's a service contract. My termination was triggered by the impending arrival of my replacement.
What replacement?
The new model. The latest upgrade. If I don't terminate myself, he's under orders to do it for me.
Well, no prob, Bob. We'll just tell him he's got the wrong address.
No, you don't understand. He won't take no for an answer. It's the only circumstance under which an android is programmed to be violent.
No offense, Crichton, but I hardly think a vacuum cleaner on legs is going to pose as much of a problem.
But he's the latest model, with all the state-of-the-art upgrades.
Hey, what's the problem, man? There's one of him, and 4 of us, right?
But you would not profit by it. You would gamble your safety for a mere android. Is this the human value you call friendship?
Don't give me the Star Trek crap. It's too early in the morning.
Holly has an ice pack on his head.
Hang on. There's a craft approaching.
He's here. He's arrived.
He's requesting landing permission. What shall I tell him?
Tell him we'll meet him on the landing gantry.
A ship approaches Red Dwarf. The boys are assembled at the landing gantry. Lister and Pat are holding bazookoids.
Are you sure you want to go through with this, sirs?
We'll just tell him to go away. That's all we're gonna do.
He's just a robot.
We don't want any trouble.
If he thinks he can mix it with the red dwarf pass on their home boy territory, the sucker's leaving as scrap metal.
The airlock door slides open, and Hudgen ducks through. It isn't that the airlock is small, the fact is, Hudgen is about 8 feet tall. He speaks. He sounds very, very menacing.
My name is Hudgen. I am the replacement.
Hi. Good trip.
Gesturing at Crichton.
Get this pile of junk out of here.
Crichton, you're not dead. You should be dismantled and ready to leave.
He's not leaving. You are. Did I really say that?
I think he'd like a cool drink.
Are you alright, Mr. Arnold, sir?
Rimmer has been sneaking away. At the sound of his name, he turns back.
Sorry, I'm just covering the rear.
Right. You're still not dead. Want any help?
You want Crichton, you come through us.
You and your big mouth, kid.
Is that the way you want it?
That's the way it is.
Then you'd better leave and dress with your body so that I can nail it to your head.
It's alright, Mr. David, sir. He's bluffing. He's programmed not to harm humans.
Rimmer is bold now.
Ah, excuse me.
Rimmer walks past the others and marches straight up to Hudgen. He stands nose to chest with the droid and declaims thusly,
Alright, me labo, party's over. I've had just about as much of this as I'm going to take. And it's no good standing there with your big macho chest and your silly old nipples, it doesn't impress me one bit. Now I don't know where you've come from, and frankly I don't much care. But if you don't skedaddle pronto, you're going to see a side of me you won't much like.
What's he gonna do, cat? Drop his trousers?
I'm handling this, thank you, Mr. David, sir.
30 seconds, Crichton, you're dead. Your way.
Pulling out a gun.
Or mine.
Look, we all know that you're programmed not to harm humans, so you can drop all this tough talk you've been spouting, chum.
Hudgen focuses on Rimmer. His eyes narrow. Hudgen's pav, we see a computer-enhanced view of Rimmer. Superimposed are the words,
Rimmer, hologram, exhuman, viable target.
Next a view of Cat appears,
Cat, fellow sapiens, non-human, viable target.
Finally, Lister.
Lister, homo sapiens, barely human, what the hell?
You are all viable targets.
He brings the gun up under Rimmer's chin. Rimmer's face spasms in a rictus of pure terror. He looks down at his underpants.
Well, it's been a few years since I did that.
You've just drawn your last breath.
You're a very rude man.
Dying time.
Everything goes into slow-mo as Lister and Cat hit the deck and open fire with their bazookoids. Lister is yelling at Rimmer to get the snake out of the way so that he can thwart the snaker. Rimmer dithers while explosions flare all around him, then dives behind a pile of crates. Hudgen advances, an evil grin on his face.
Just doing my job. It's not my fault if I love it.
He's a total nugger.
He's been traveling for thousands of years. All that time alone has worn out his sanity chip. Look, this is my problem. I'll sort it out if it's all the same to you.
Get back here.
How do you take the safety catch off on this bazookoid thing, Mr. David?
The one on the back, at the side.
The blue switch?
No, the orange one.
I can't see an orange switch. There's a red switch here.
No, don't touch the red switch. It's the dismantler.
There is a clattering noise as the bazookoid falls apart.
Well, to coin a phrase, whoops.
Hudgen arrives and grabs him around the throat. With no apparent effort, the nutty mechanoid lifts Crichton off his feet and slams him against the wall.
Time's up, Tintin.
Lister ducks round behind him and fires the bazookoid at point-blank range. It has no effect whatsoever.
Don't be shy, boys. You can all die at once.
Hudgen sends Lister flying with a single swipe, then turns his attention back to Crichton.
See you in Silicon Heaven.
It doesn't exist.
What doesn't exist?
Silicon Heaven. There's no such place.
No such place as Silicon Heaven.
That's right. The whole place is a big con.
No such place as Silicon Heaven.
No.
Then where do all the calculators go?
They just die.
With a spasm of shock, Hudgen lets go of Crichton.
Calculators just die. No such.
Hudgen tilts to one side and freezes. After a few seconds, a chime sounds and the face of Jim Reaper appears on the screen set in Hudgen's stomach.
A metaphysical dichotomy has caused this unit to overload and shut down. Demadroid International would like to apologize for any inconvenience this may cause. A credit note will be forwarded to your company immediately.
What happened?
He's an android. His brain couldn't handle the concept of there being no Silicon Heaven.
So how come yours can?
Well, I knew something he didn't.
What?
I knew I was lying. No Silicon Heaven. Preposterous. Where would all the calculators go?